Fans of public access cable television, here's a story for you. Four filmmakers are making a documentary about the golden age of public access cable in Seattle. It's called Channeling Yourself. Ross Reynolds has more.
At the dawn of the cable television era in the 1980s, the federal government gave local authorities the ability to regulate cable companies, and a movement began to require those cable companies to provide public access to cable TV channels. Remember that Saturday Night Live skit and movie Wayne's World? Well, it was public access cable TV that inspired it, and Seattle was a hotbed of the movement. Judith Card.
I moved up from California a little over 20 years ago, and I turned on the television, and the first thing I saw was public access, and I couldn't believe it.
I'm Shannon Pringan.
Danger.
I've been referred to as, oh, you're the naked lady on TV.
I said, Mom, what is this thing? And she said, it's public access.
It's your chance at showbiz. Channel 29.
I happened upon this show called Political Playhouse. It was a variety show about politics.
Danger.
We're seizing the studio in the name of Political Playhouse so we can run hours upon hours of Playhouse programming.
Let's get naked.
It just was kind of crazy and kooky and fun, and it just looked like something I wanted to be a part of. And within 2 weeks, I was on the show.
Public access cable TV was like nothing before or since. Scott Scowcroft was manager at public access cable TV in the 80s and 90s.
Up until then, the mass media was reserved for those who could afford it, or those who were famous, or those who had political connections. But cable television came along. The municipalities across the country, led by Seattle, the city of Seattle, made a provision of the franchise agreement that they provide a channel to the citizens of the community. And in this case, it was not only Seattle, but all of King County, making this one of the largest community access facilities or centers in the entire country, with over 100,000 households receiving the signal. But it's not enough just to have a channel. One has to be able to produce programming. So a studio was provided, and port-a-packs, and a remote van fully equipped with great gear. And then let them go and let them produce whatever it is that they wanted to do, as long as it was, you know, constitutionally protected speech. Especially in the 1980s, it was a wonderful playland where people could come and express themselves in ways that they never could before.
A conspiracy theory shows.
There's a woman who came in and channeled an ancient spirit.
There's foreign language shows.
Bongo Corral was a local music scene.
Joan E. O'Brien was a cable access TV producer.
There were no guidelines. The films, the programs weren't screened before they went on the air.
Furry gorilla chest next to my breasts.
There was a slice of people who felt that community access television was their ticket to Hollywood. Bill Nye is one person who started that.
As Matt explained, my name is Bill. In television, I really can't hear you. It's like, it just reminds me of a singles bar.
In the 1990s, C.R. Douglas, now a Q13 Fox TV analyst, wanted to do a public affairs TV show. But he was having trouble getting his foot in the door at commercial stations. So he thought,
what if I go out there and just start my own show? And that's what I did. There'd be days where I would come after the pornography show, but before the cooking show, or after the astrology show, and before the yoga show. I mean, it was a hotbed of craziness, but in a great way.
Scott Scowcroft, former manager of Seattle Public Access Cable TV.
I can remember that we had a representative of the Ku Klux Klan who had a weekly program. Nice guy. We had another fellow, James Bess, who... He had become disenfranchised from the Louis Farrakhan organization, but had a weekly program as well. One of my memories is that we'd have monthly meetings in our studios, and there was Kelly and there was James, and they were sitting right across the aisle from each other.
The Ku Klux Klan guy and the Louis Farrakhan guy.
And the Louis Farrakhan guy. And incidentally, on air, both of them were, on a scale of 1 to 10, their rhetoric was about 9.5 or 10. After the meeting, I walked up and I talked to both of them, and they were as respectful to each other, and it was truly one of those amazing human dramas that played out.
The rallying cry of public access cable was free speech. Some wanted to push that definition. One programmer did a show reviewing pornography.
it started off to be pretty soft pornography, but eventually it got to be really, really rugged stuff that was out on the air. And parents would be tuning in, and all of a sudden they'd see something that would be really shocking. Or worse yet, they would find one of their children watching some pretty rugged programming on the channel.
Judith Card says the shows with porn and naked people were what public access became known for.
It did damage the reputation of the station. Kind of everyone was typecast, and the things you would see in the newspapers was all about nudity, and it colored the station in a certain way that I think not everyone wanted to be seen.
C.R. Douglas was trying to convince elected officials and authors to come onto his show, Northwest Week.
Having to kind of explain, yes, I'm on the channel, and yes, we might follow a porno show, but I promise you, I am legitimate and you will have a good experience. It took some convincing, and I think there were a few guests that said, I'm not going to touch you in that station.
A disgruntled public access viewer sent a videotape of the show that reviewed porn to an executive at the cable TV company, Scott Scowcroft.
You can just envision this, Ross. He's in his office, and you've got the day-to-day business of running a cable company, and you get this package from some subscriber in Seattle. You open up, you put the tape in. You might have a secretary around, you know, other people around. You hit play, and all of a sudden, here's this poorly produced show that cuts to this really terrible, you know, awful programming. And he blew his stack and he said, get them off the air.
That show's producers sued public access for kicking them off. They were upset. Parents were upset. The cable company was upset. Politicians were upset. Public access cable lost support and money.
I am confident that it was that programming that scuttled it from, you know, Oregon and Idaho and probably Montana and Alaska. And I've heard municipalities, people say, well, you know, they talked about it in the city council and they said, we don't want to have happening here what we heard happened up in Seattle.
Joan E. O'Brien.
And the great thing and the bad thing about the First Amendment rights and freedom of speech is that everyone has an opportunity to say or do what they want. But that was the great thing about public access, and it was also the thing that I think kind of brought it down.
Since the 1990s, we have many more cable channels. We have YouTube. We can watch television on our phones. C.R. Douglas.
There is too much choice, and public access will never have the heyday it had in the 90s because of that. So there's a ton more choice. That's the good side. The bad side is that we don't have that local amateur voice anymore that's easy to find. Public access helped create, in an odd, crazy way, a community around here. And we don't have that anymore.
But we do have the video. Joan E. O'Brien and Judith Card are working on a documentary film about the heyday of Seattle Public Access TV. It's called Channeling Yourself. They expect to finish it next year. Meanwhile, they've set up a shelf at Scarecrow Video in Seattle's University District. It's got videotapes of many of the original public access shows, and you can rent them all. Ross Reynolds brought us that story.